A few weeks ago, Atlantic correspondent Jeffrey Goldberg was summoned to Havana by Fidel Castro. The former Cuban leader wanted to discuss Goldberg's article about Iran and the Middle East. For some help on Cuba, Goldberg brought along his friend Julia Swag, senior fellow and director of Latin American Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. Julia Swag is the director of Latin American Studies and also the author of Cuba, What Everyone Needs to Know and Inside the Cuban Revolution. And she joins us now from the studio at the Council on Foreign Relations here in Washington, D.C. Nice to have you back.
Thanks for having me. Hello, Neil.
Hi. So there's no dispute that Fidel said the Cuban model doesn't even work for us anymore, but now he says he didn't mean it like it sounded.
Exactly. A couple of days after we left, last Friday that is, he went to the University of Havana to release the second of a series of books he's now writing and took the opportunity to say that he was accurately quoted but misinterpreted.
How could you misinterpret that?
Well, the way I interpreted it and the way Jeff Goldberg's blog quotes me is saying is he wasn't brushing off the revolution. What he was saying was the economic model doesn't really work for us anymore. My take on all of this, Neil, is that, and especially this is borne out by the news coming out of Cuba this week, is that what he wanted to say with his clarification was that even though we're changing our model and it doesn't work for us anymore, that doesn't mean we're going to import American style capitalism. And he was saying that to certain constituencies on the island who have been born and bred to see American style capitalism as anathema.
And he considers that a failure. But the news you mentioned coming out this week, 500,000 jobs, government jobs, are going to be, well, eliminated.
Yes. Over the summer, the National Assembly met and President Raul Castro, Fidel Castro's brother, laid out the steps to be taken as part of the reform agenda he's been slowly implementing over the last 2 years. The elimination of beginning with 550,000 jobs from the state payrolls, but that number is going to double, I believe, over the next year and a half or 2 years, is joined by the legalization of private economic activity, business, small businesses, for really the first time since 1968 when they were abolished. It's big stuff. It's not just cutting the state payroll. It's opening up the economy for small-scale businesses.
Some astonishingly high percentage of the people in Cuba are on the state payroll.
About 85%, I think, is the number.
And with that comes, well, all kinds of benefits, not much in pay, but health care and free education, that sort of thing.
Yes, but, I'm not quite sure yet because this is sort of a rolling news and it's unfolding right now. Cutting off the salaries, I don't think at all implies losing the benefits of health and education. It means, there's a lot of people in Cuba that receive a state salary, but that don't actually work. And these bloated bureaucracies and bloated state payrolls cost the state a lot of money. But I have heard nothing along the lines of losing your job means losing access to those basic social services that the state is still paying for and providing.
And these people are expected now to go out and form small businesses?
Well, exactly. One of the things that one notices, and I've watched this and experienced it over the last 15 years there, actually since the end of the socialist bloc, so a little bit longer, is there's a huge black economy, huge underground economy. You can get almost any service and buy almost anything you need in Cuba in the black economy, in the underground economy. So the intention, as I understand it, is to bring that stuff up to the surface and allow the state to garner revenues through taxes. And by taxing, businesses will be charged 5% tax on the income that they earn, and they'll be asked to pay a payroll tax. So in the past, in the 1990s, when small-scale self-employment was allowed, people could only employ themselves and two other family members. Now the limits on employing others have been removed. That's very significant. And the businesses will be asked to pay a 5% sales tax and 25% Social Security and payroll tax. Now, that sounds quite familiar. Mm-hmm. That's the way a lot of states get revenue to then be able to pay for education, health services, infrastructure, that kind of thing.
And as this kind of program goes on, obviously, if Fidel Castro were to be if it was interpreted by many people in Cuba that Fidel Castro had lost faith in the economic part of the revolution, that would be enormous news.
Well, it feels like enormous news because Fidel Castro is so well known to be a committed socialist, a Marxist-Leninist, anti-capitalist, anti-market. But the truth is that even before he got sick, he got sick in 2006, stepped down in 2008, back in 2005, made a speech talking about all the different errors that had been made, including the error of importing lock, stock, and barrel, the Soviet economic model. Raul and others, and now this is not even a secret. It's openly discussed. This is the milieu in Cuba today. People are discussing the fact that the model doesn't work and we have to change it. So the news of Fidel sort of just, openly acknowledging what everybody knows and talks about feels like news on the outside. But it was a sort of statement of the obvious for those that follow this and those that live in Cuba, more importantly.
You mentioned Castro's illness. Obviously, he turned the reins of power over to his brother because he was suffering a variety of ailments, intestinal ailments. How did he look? How did he sound?
He looked great. He sounded great. I met him for the first time when I worked for a Washington-based think tank in 1987. I then met him in 1998 and about 10 years later, and then most recently about 10 years ago, still at that time with the Council on Foreign Relations. Hadn't seen him since 2001. He suffered a very serious illness. He has color in his cheeks, bright disposition, voluminous energy. I thought he looked pretty well for an 84-year-old man that was that sick.
And while we're talking about his comments about Cuba, he is mostly speaking out today about international affairs, leaving Cuba to his brother and others. And indeed, the reason he called Jeffrey Goldberg to Havana was to discuss the Middle East.
Correct. Cuba has always been, in a way, too small of a stage for Fidel Castro. Even when he was president, big issues of international security and war and peace and globalization and debt crisis and climate change and sort of the big global issues of the day have been his priority and his focus. The Middle East was the topic of his first public speech this past summer in July when, instead of a 7-hour speech, he made a 7-minute speech. I say 7 hours because, of course, when he was president,
these were common, yes.
Exactly. So in 7 minutes, he spoke about one and only one thing, and that was his concern that a military confrontation between the United States, Iran, and Israel could take place, A, but B, potentially escalate into a nuclear conflict. And that speech was given about 10 days before my friend Jeff Goldberg's article in The Atlantic came out saying, I, Jeffrey Goldberg, am worried about this as well, in so many words, not agreeing with Fidel, but laying out on the basis of his reporting over the last several months the potential, in his view, of such a crisis involving the United States, Iran, and Israel, and potentially going nuclear. So Fidel read the article. He reads widely, and I think felt that this was somebody he wanted to hear from more, and so invited Goldberg to come down and talk about just those issues.
And while Fidel's views may not hold much sway in Washington or perhaps in Tel Aviv, it is interesting that he told Jeffrey Goldberg he's been speaking about this with the Iranian president, Ahmed Ahmadinejad.
Well, he did mention a discussion that he had with him when Ahmadinejad was in Havana not long after actually Fidel got sick at the end of 2006 when Cuba, then chairing the Non-Aligned Movement, hosted a very large gathering of leaders from non-aligned countries, including Ahmadinejad. I think the important part of the discussion with Goldberg and Jeffrey's blog on The Atlantic goes into more detail about this, and I know he'll write more about it, was Fidel's insistence that Ahmadinejad respect Jewish history, respect the Holocaust, respect the State of Israel, and that clarity with which Fidel communicated that to Goldberg for Ahmadinejad and Iran to hear was really quite important given the stakes and given the concern in the Middle East and given, I would say, the standing that Fidel Castro has in the non-alignment movement and for potentially, I hope at least, those listening in Iran.
And it was interesting that he was pointing out to the Iranian president that, yes, Muslims have had it hard being disrespected by the West. The Jews have had it harder.
Yes, it was very interesting. I mean, you know, There was no pause when Fidel was expressing his view of Jewish history and also his interest in the Inquisition, which, of course, Bibi Netanyahu's father is a great scholar of, as Jeff Goldberg's article explains. It was very clear that there was a great sort of simpatico for Jewish history for the State of Israel from Fidel. And he made a point of talking about, as Jeff writes, the kind of environment in the Catholic education he received of anti-Semitism in Cuba when he was a small boy. And he expressed a kind of outrage at the ignorance that reflected of his own society.
We're talking with Julia Swag, a senior fellow and director of Latin American Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, who accompanied Jeff Goldberg, the correspondent of the Atlantic for his conversations with Fidel Castro recently in Havana. You can find a link to those blogs that we've been talking about at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. And this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And as he was talking about Fidel, in that 7-minute speech you referenced, said he was alarmed, not merely worried, that the prospect of war with Iran and that it might escalate into nuclear war. And of course, he had firsthand knowledge of the most dangerous nuclear incident in history.
Yes, you're talking about the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis, and we talked about the most dangerous day of the Cuban Missile Crisis, October 27th, which is the day on which a very young Fidel Castro, by comparison to his 84 years today, wrote a now infamous letter to Nikita Khrushchev. And I won't try to quote this accurately. I don't have it in front of me, but essentially saying, if the Americans invade us, which they're likely to do, Fidel was convinced that the United States was planning an invasion, you, Khrushchev, should go ahead and strike first with the nuclear missiles against the United States. And that was, of course, an enormously inflammatory letter, and Khrushchev didn't listen to Castro. But from that moment and from the peril and danger of that moment, what I gather and what came out from this interview was this Fidel Castro, the 84-year-old Fidel Castro, being extremely worried that rational people can do irrational things in the heat of the moment, and that President Barack Obama and the other actors on this stage might be pulled into a situation that they don't themselves want to be in, but could be, as Fidel Castro was himself. And that was the alarm that he was expressing, the unintended consequences, if I can try to paraphrase mm-hmm. him accurately, the unintended consequences that would come in the aftermath of the imposition of sanctions against Iran. That was the alarm of which he spoke.
Did you get any sense from him, a reinvigorated Fidel Castro, that he might want to retake the reins, that he might want to get more involved in Cuban politics?
Not at all. I mean, I have to say, I spent 3 days with him. Well, we were with him on three different occasions when Jeff was in Havana with me, and then Jeff left, and then I sat down and did a separate interview myself with him, and then saw him the next day. So over the course of a week, there was a lot of time with him, and I did not see any evidence. And this was both in terms of what he talked about and what he didn't talk about, how he spent his time and how he didn't spend his time, that this is a person who's getting back involved in the nitty-gritty of governance on the island, doing the domestic heavy lifting of transforming that economy that his brother is doing, nor the conduct actually of foreign policy. While I was there, Raul Castro was receiving heads of state from Africa. He was meeting with heads of delegations from political parties in Spain. He was doing the stuff of foreign relations of a head of state. But Fidel, by what he didn't say and didn't do, in at least in that week, I observed, seemed to be making very clear that those two areas are his brother's domain and not his. Now, Neil, that doesn't mean to say that he's not engaged, he's not interested, he's not actively following and participating as what he calls himself, the líder histórico, the historic leader of the revolution. But I noticed a very strong differentiation between what he used to do and how he spends his time now.
And he's writing books?
He's writing books. He's written two books. One was, as I said, released last week. The other one a couple of months ago. He is revisiting his history. Mm. He's going over documents. He's thinking, he's writing, and he is engaging, of course, with the international issues of the day as well. Before the Middle East crisis, it was climate change. And I suspect there will be other issues on which we'll hear from Fidel Castro.
The end of Jeffrey Goldberg's first blog concludes, he'll begin his next post on the subject by describing one of the stranger days I've experienced, a day which began with a simple question from Fidel: would you like to go to the aquarium with me to see the dolphin show? Did you go with him to the aquarium?
Yes, I went to the aquarium, and there's a photo of it on Jeff's blog. We went to the aquarium. It was a Monday, which gives you an indication that Fidel isn't running the country. You know, museums and places like aquariums are closed in many countries, including in Cuba. And on a Monday, Fidel was able to get the aquarium opened, and we went along for the ride or the show and watched the dolphin show, which was pretty spectacular, and brought with us Adela Dwornin, who's the president of the Jewish community there. And it was downright unreal, but there we were.
There you were. Julia Zweig, it must have been a great experience. Thanks very much for sharing some of it with us.
Thanks for having me, Neil. Take care.
Julia Zweig, Senior Fellow and Director for Latin American Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, just back with Jeffrey Goldberg from a visit to Havana. Tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, results from 8 primaries, Ken Rudin on Junkie Day. What more could you want? Be with us then. I'm Neil Cownan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.